Today I don't feel like doing anything. I just wanna lay in my bed.
And now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
I'm not doing anything. I'm gonna kick my feet up and stare at the fan. Turn the TV on, throw my hand in my pants.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
You've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Listen to the Prophets, a podcast covering every episode of the Star Trek series Deep Space Nine, heralded by Professor Alan Middleton as the best Babylon 5 knockoff ever.
Is that a hotly contested title?
Yes, it is. My name's Sean Engel, and today on the show we're going to cover the second season episode, Melora, which is much like melanoma, which would probably be preferable to what we're watching. This is a show where the Eighth Doctor's companion gets bitchy and self-righteous because she doesn't want to be treated differently because of her birth on a planet with significantly lighter gravity than, oh, let's say, every other planet in the galaxy. What's up with that? Oh, and Quark receives a death threat from an alien who must have a real problem eating soup. I'm just saying, I would expect a 24th century rhinoplasty would have the ability to fix that thing, but who knows. Luckily, joining me today to talk about this wonderful episode and freaky aliens with weird nose-to-chin bridges are my two good friends, Mr. Paul Spataro.
Hello.
And Mr. Andrew Leyland. How's it going,
gentlemen? Hello, everybody. It's going well now that I know we're just going to rip this one a new one.
Yeah.
Oh, just thank God I don't have to do the synopsis on this piece of crap. God, I feel sorry for that guy.
Well, go on, get into it.
I hate you all with the passion of a thousand white-hot burning suns.
That's not very nice. It really
is. No, it's not. No, having to synopsize this episode. Well, if I actually had to write the synopsis, that'd be even worse. But
yeah, but we had to watch it, so that's, you know. Yeah,
we all had to watch it.
We were tortured enough.
Yeah, well. Do we want to talk any Star Trek news, or do we just want to get this over with?
You can do the news if you want. What is the...
There's going to be a Star Trek Green Lantern crossover.
Yay! That means we can all go on Just One of the Guys!
Yeah, that's true. You can come over on Just One of the Guys. I'll cover that, and we'll talk about Star Trek over there. That'd be great.
Yeah, so there you go. Something good came out of it.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And so
we know nothing about it. We know it's going to be Green Lantern, and I think it's going to be the Abrams Star Trek, because the image they showed looked like the sort of revamped Enterprise from the 09 movie, so people will probably hate it regardless. I don't.
Well, there's no reason to wait and see if it's actually of any quality.
No, they're just gonna. It's 09 Star Trek. Oh, I can't stand it. So
what is it? Is it a 6-issue mini or something?
They really haven't said that all that much. They just said they just showed the image of the Green Lantern symbol with the Enterprise sort of flying through it, and yeah, I don't know. There's been numerous comic book Star Trek crossovers. I know they've done one with the Legion. I know they did some with the X-Men. I'm trying to remember. They did, obviously, yeah.
Were they,
Planet
were they
of the Apes.
Particularly well received?
Not to my knowledge.
All right, well, the Planet of the Apes one seems to be doing all right.
Yeah, and the Doctor Who one started out really well, so. Yeah.
Paul has nothing to say about this project, apparently.
Well. It's hard to comment on it until something comes out, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
The surprising thing is the way we air these episodes, it'll probably be out and over and done with by the time this episode comes out. So,
yeah, well, the amazing thing about that is we had actually talked about that happening jokingly on an earlier episode before it was actually announced. Now, the lovely list, yeah, we did. We actually, I don't know if it was on a show, but you were on, we did Back to the Bins, and you were on about, well, we need to get onto just one of the guys, and the only way we can do that is if you do a crossover with Green Lantern. And then lo and behold, the day after, I sent you the link.
Surprisingly, I think I remember that now, but yeah. Well, when it comes out, and if it is good, well, you are more than welcome to come over on Just One of the Guys and we'll cover it.
So our being on, first of all.
Yeah, our being on Just One of the Guys is dependent on it being good.
They do a crossover, as if like we don't know like the guy who actually controls who goes on Just One of the Guys.
Secondly,
I didn't know you were so guarded on your show.
You
invite Gene and Bill on this show with a drop of a hat.
Well, Gene's our only other listener.
I know. We have nobody to listen when he's on the show.
If Fish wants to come on.
Yeah, Jeff Fishman, he wanted to come on, so yeah. Jeff, if you ever want to come on, you're more than welcome as well. Unfortunately, that just means less letter writing, so.
Less people to actually listen if they're all on the show.
Yeah, you're one to talk, Andy. You don't listen to any of these shows after you do them.
Oh, come on, I'm here now!
Okay, well, I guess that's cold comfort. So.
I can't be the only one who doesn't want to listen to himself.
I only want to listen to myself.
I didn't think you were a raving egomaniac.
Well, not raving. Let's get into this.
In a world of insurmountable odds,
I am not comfortable sending you alone to the Gamma Quadrant.
A Starfleet officer struggles to survive.
No one can understand until they sit in the chair.
Now, a revolutionary procedure.
I can lift my leg.
Your neural pathway is beginning to adapt.
Could be the key to a whole new future.
This would mean real independence.
But at what price?
I'm not going ahead with the treatments.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
We're just going to do this.
We are procrastinating, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Melora was episode 26 of the second season, or it was entitled episode 426. It had a teleplay by Evan Carlos Summers and Stephen Baum and Michael Piller and James Croker, so a lot of people writing it. The story was by Evan Carlos Summers, and it was directed by Weinrich Kolb. Melora was played by Daphne Ashbrook, who some of you might know as the companion in the upcoming Doctor Who TV show that aired in America, surprisingly, before it did in the UK, which was surprising. And once again, the synopsis comes from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine companion, because no one wants to write about this.
Because it can.
Dr. Bashir is eager to meet Ensign Melora Paslar, a cartographer assigned to chart the Gamma Quadrant. Because Melora is Starfleet's first Elysian recruit, Bashir and O'Brien have been working overtime to make the station accessible to someone accustomed to a low-gravity environment. Melora requires a special wheelchair, which Bashir has replicated for her, and braces to get around in TS9's gravity. O'Brien has set up special ramps where possible and has modified living conditions in her quarters. Melora's personnel files reveal an impressive woman, but one who won't tolerate being coddled, a personality trait that's verified with a vengeance when she arrives. Melora despises being considered a person with a quote-unquote problem, and she's not very happy when Sisko tells her that he does not intend to let her take a runabout to the Gamma Quadrant alone. Dax is assigned to accompany her, and later Bashir visits Melora at her quarters and successfully parries her attempts to put him on the defensive. Taken aback by his pleasant determination to befriend her, Melora accepts an invitation to dinner. Quark is also trying to get on the good side of a dinner guest, with far less success. Fallet Kott, an old business acquaintance of Quark who served 8 years in a labor camp for a deal gone sour, has made no secret of the fact that he's returned to Deep Space Nine to kill the Ferengi. When offers of wine and women fail to win over Kott, Quark appeals to Odo for help. Although the constable enjoys seeing Quark squirm, he agrees to look into the situation. However, as he points out, he has no reason to arrest Kott unless Kott actually attempts to harm Quark. Just prior to leaving for the mission and in the Gamma Quadrant, Melora suffers the fall and Dax has to help her to the infirmary. Melora's injuries are minor, but the incident leaves her feeling humiliated until Bashir reassures her that no one in space is completely self-sufficient, that it's alright to count on others. Melora's feelings for Bashir reach a turning point and she decides that she can trust him on a personal level. She invites him into her quarters and turns down the gravity, allowing him to see her quote-unquote fly, and to learn to fly himself. The pair are soon entwined in a passionate mid-air kiss, and other bodily fluids are secreted around. En route to the Gamma Quadrant, Melora allows herself to confide in Dax and expresses concern over getting involved with Bashir. Dax encourages her to enjoy the moment and forego thinking about the future. When they return to the station, Bashir has a surprise for Melora. He's been researching an old neuromuscular adaptation therapy that he thinks would allow Melora to move around without her wheelchair or braces. The therapy proves extremely promising. However, Melora's delight at her increased mobility is tempered with the knowledge that she will have to stop using the low-gravity field actuator in her quarters because it will confuse her motor cortex. That night, Cod is prepared to make good on his vow to kill Quark, but the Ferengi manages to convince him that the 199 bars of latinum Quark is about to receive from a trade might be better than revenge. However, after Cod receives the latinum, he kills Quark's traitor associate and takes the Ferengi hostage. Cod drags Quark to the runabout, and the one in which Dax and Melora have just returned. Cod orders to take it out again, but when they do, Sisko snares it with a tractor beam. Cod warns Sisko to release the ship, then fires his phaser at Melora to prove that he's serious. Sisko, O'Brien, and Bashir beam into another runabout as Kira releases the tractor beam. When Cod discovers that he's being pursued, he orders Dax to fire on the second ship. Dax, who notes that Melora has regained consciousness, stalls long enough for the injured Elysian to crawl over to a control that disengages the runabout's gravity. Cod is thrown off guard by his sudden weightlessness, which allows Melora to take advantage of the moment and disable him. After they return to the station, Melora tells Bashir that she has decided to discontinue the treatments which would have allowed her to be like the others, but would have changed who she really was. I want to go first because I will probably be the most positive on this. It wasn't a horrible episode. I enjoyed it. It's kind of hard to say that I enjoyed the character of Melora because she comes off as such a bitch.
You think?
At the beginning of the show. We're seeing a more character development of Bashir, but when you look at it after what we saw in the last episode, how well Bashir was able to act, it's really kind of a step down. It is an improvement from the first season, but not really that much. Daphne Ashbrook's cute.
No.
That's all personal preference. That's about all I have to say.
I'll go next.
Go ahead.
That Daredevil series is great, isn't it? Okay, seriously. it felt very much like a story where somebody had said, I am going to write about somebody in Star Trek who has a disability, rather than writing a story about somebody who is... No, I've said that wrong, haven't I? It felt very much like somebody writing a story and going into it saying, right, I will write about being disabled, as opposed to writing a story that had a disabled character in it. That's better. That makes more sense, because I can speak English. It was incredibly boring. It was very boring to watch. The Quark Odo stuff was slightly better, especially the line, you don't have to be so pleased to see me, all right, I won't. That was funny. And the Klingon diner stuff was amusing. I hope we see him again because he was entertaining. But for me, this goes into what we've talked about before. I would rather have it be utterly terrible but still moderately fun, Alan Moraine, than boring as hell. And this was boring as hell.
All right, go ahead and eviscerate it, Paul.
I think actually I may be in between the two of you. So it's kind of like a Listen to the Prophet sandwich. But,
Well, now that I think about that,
I have one note on this. One. And it's all aboard for the cliche express.
Now,
I mean, every aspect of this episode is a cliche, including the Quark stuff. And the Quark stuff is, as Andy said, nominally better than what we got with the Melora stuff. But the Melora stuff is painfully cliched. It's so horrible. The person who comes in and she's angry at everybody already because they're talking down to her for being handicapped. And she isn't even freaking handicapped. She just comes from a different environment.
And they're not talking down to her.
Yeah.
It was just, but Bashir is in love with her because he could see through that anger. And he can
understand despite having never met her.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was stupid. It was, you know what? It was pandering to handicapped people. That's what it was. Wasn't actually an episode of a handicapped person overcoming a disability. It was just a love letter to being handicapped. Like, oh, if you could be lucky enough to be handicapped.
It was stupid. Surprisingly, contrasting in our last episode where we talked about how some people... like the O'Brien scene with Rugal, how people sometimes, or with Keiko with Rugal, how they sometimes try too hard to be accommodating to people who are different or people who have disabilities or people who are unique. This is a bad example of that. That episode was a good example of how you deal with that and how you overcome that. This was not.
What's funny is I said I was going to be in between the two of you, and then once I started ranting on it, clearly I was the most down on it. Because I got angry talking about it.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, what's his name? Evan Carlos Summers. Supposedly, he is a paraplegic. I'm assuming that he probably has loss of the use of his legs. So he comes from this storyline, or the person who wrote this story has an intimate knowledge of... you know, supposedly what would be going on with this person. But I agree with you. It does seem so cliched. Everything in here feels like pandering to a person who's got a supposed disability, but they can overcome it if only people would understand that they're just as effective as everyone else. And,
yeah, it was painful to watch. It really was. It was just so badly done, and that's not to be impatient with people with handicaps. I understand that is something that they could write a wonderful episode though that will give us some insight into it. This wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got so bored with it that I actually looked up some science while I was watching it. And one of the things that somebody said, I forget where I looked it up now because I read a number of different sites, but somebody said there is a significant difference between low gravity planets and zero gravity planets. And they never actually make the distinction on here. Like when we've had astronauts go to the moon, there is a lower gravity on the moon than there is here on Earth. And it's just, I just looked up all of that, and apparently the cast and the actress doesn't work for a lower gravity planet. And because that's how bored I was.
Is it possible to have a zero-gravity planet? Doesn't the size of the planet itself create its own gravity at some point?
I would have thought so, but I'm not a scientist.
Isn't that the science as we know it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, and you could say what she was creating in her room was microgravity. You know, it was so insignificant an amount of gravity that it was almost zero gravity. Supposedly, that's what they have when they're orbiting the Earth. Like in the shuttle or in the ISS space station, that they're affected by microgravity, but it's almost negligible amounts. But you would think that, and here's me doing a little science as well, if she comes from this, her bone structure, and, you know, just... essentially, it's like this. It would be like us going to a planet that had 10 times the gravity field that Earth does. Essentially, if we weigh, you know, 150 or 200 pounds or whatever, on that planet we would weigh 10 times that. Our body could not be able to move, our musculature wouldn't work, we couldn't breathe effectively because our lungs couldn't be able to do this. There's all a bunch of scientific stuff that just doesn't work for her having a little sort of pseudo endoskeleton thing, and the science behind it just is dubious at best.
Yeah, I and you know what? It wasn't the science that made this a bad episode.
No, I can happily throw scientific accuracy out the window if the episode's engaging me. The fact that I was looking this up whilst I was watching it proves that it wasn't engaging me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, this one was multitask or fall asleep.
I think I fell asleep twice, I'll be honest with you.
It took me three sittings to watch it, not because I fell asleep, but because it was like I watched 15 minutes and I had enough and I turned it off for a while and came back later.
See, for me, I do wonder if I was resentful of watching it because I could be watching another episode of Daredevil instead of this. Now, I didn't mind that with Cardassians because that was a good one and an engaging episode. This one was just not.
I think the word you're looking for is cack.
Yeah, yes, it was cack.
It's just, like I said, it was just so... like I said, even the Quark story, which was nominally better. I know the guy comes in, he's just spouting cliche after cliche at Quark. Then the resolution with the turning off the gravity, and she comes at him like as a
like torpedo. Superman. She's like Superman. She balls herself up and flies at him with her fist out front and punches him out. Really?
Yeah. And somehow I'm thinking with no gravity, all you would do is kind of brush her aside and she would go into the wall instead.
Mm-hmm.
It really had no aspect of this episode that I liked. So I don't have a lot to say because it just was, you know, it wasn't bad because the science was bad, and it wasn't bad because, well, no, it was bad because the acting was bad. I thought Bashir's acting in this was subpar. I think they gave him a script that was impossible to act well, because how he could have possibly fallen for this woman is just beyond me, and he's walking around with this stupid grin on his face the whole episode.
Well, maybe some guys are, you know, into being denigrated and bitched at by women. Maybe that's how Bashir gets off. Maybe he's a masochist. That's it.
If you want to try and put together something to make it make sense, you could say his whole pretense of being a ladies' man and all is false, and that, you know, he really does have very low self-esteem, and that's why he ended up falling for her, because of his own low self-esteem. I'm trying here.
Yeah, this is, you know, we're not no-prizing our way out of this, are we? I like the Klingon guy.
Yeah, he was amusing.
Yeah.
You know, although the fact that the one scene when they come back from break and Bashir is eating the supposed gawk, now that I'm watching it on Netflix in sort of a higher definition, you can tell that that's a gummy worm. I mean, it's even colored. It's got this sort of coloring like a gummy worm. It was bad. It's
also it was another scene though that he's trying to impress her with his knowledge, and then she has to come out. Shut up, Melora. Everyone hates you, and they have good reason to.
Again, you know, I didn't think she looked that bad. I thought she was cute. If you could just duct tape her mouth shut, she'd be fine. And I'm not advocating duct taping women's mouth shut. Well, yeah, unless they ask for it.
You know what people do in the privacy of their own bedrooms? None of our business.
Or you know, you pay for it. Not that I ever have. Ever. No. I don't have any notes aside from, you know, she was really bitchy. Does anyone have any other things that they want to say about this fine, fine episode?
It was only 42 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's yep. 41 too long.
Well, take off the opening credits. That's 40 yes. minutes.
Yeah. And the end credits another yeah. minute. So.
Did anybody have anything else to add about this episode? Well, the theme song was good.
No, but it's not, though, is it? Do you know, in every episode we've done this so far, I've fast-forwarded the opening credits every time, except for the pilot.
Yeah.
Okay, now, so what I had, the thought I had on this was, where does this fall among the worst episodes ever? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my spreadsheet and I'm going to give you the episodes that jump out at me as being rated particularly low. And okay. you tell me better or worse. Q-less.
Worse than Q-less, because at least Q-less is Yonder Lancer.
Yeah, I'll have to say worse.
Yeah, I say worse because Q-less had the one moment when Sisko punches him, and that brings it above this level. The Passenger.
Which one was that?
That was the one with the alien who died and the investigator who thought, you know, he shifted his mind into Bashir at the end.
Alright, Sean, you're disqualified from this one because you gave that a 3.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that one, so yes, this was worse.
A similar level of boredom, but yeah, probably worse.
I'm putting it at the same level. I thought that was bad, and this is bad, and they go together. All right, now here's the big question.
Like Ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong.
Can we get a drum roll, please?
Rum-bum, rum-bum, rum-bum.
Okay. Move Along Home.
Oh, come on. Move Along Home's better than this.
This is where we're going to disagree. I still look at Move Along Home.
Campy episode of Lost in Space. At the very least, it's enjoyable on that level. This was just duller than dirt. This was like watching Worms.
Really? It's like watching Worms?
Yeah, so watching Worms in your garden, just slither around.
It's a pastime in the UK. Just let him go with it.
You know, we've got to do something.
That's true. You know, they don't have all that much there in the United Kingdom, so worm watching is interesting. I'm going to say it's on par with Move Along Home. I'm sorry. Oh, I just...
Worst.
I was going to say the exact same thing, and I'm disappointed that you beat me to it. I put this at the same level as Move Along Home.
Worse than Move Along Home.
Okay. Well, you were the one who gave the rousing 1.5 bars of gold breast latinum for Move Along Home.
Well, this is the thing. I ended up being the defender of that. I don't think it's good. Don't get me wrong.
You love Move Along Home.
I do. Alla Marie. Compared to this one, I do, yes. Because at least it's campy, stupid fun. Whereas this is just shit.
Porn actors with weird forehead tattoos, so nice.
I don't have a problem with that. I am not against porn actors with weird tattoos.
There you go.
All right, the storyteller.
Oh, that's the one with the horrible Irish stereotypes, isn't it?
Yeah, marginally this is worse than that.
Yeah, this is worse than that because this is boring.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I'm in agreeance. All right, moving on to, well, that's it. Those are the worst episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's rate this pile and get it over with.
Let's rate this steaming
yes,
pile of
blood. 1.5.
Oh, 1. That's generous.
Well, I gave a 1 to Move Along Home, and I figured this is just barely above it, so 1.5.
Well, I'm going to go 1, because I gave 1.5 to Move Along Home, and I think that this is worse than that.
There you go.
I'm going to say 1 as well, because I gave 1 to Move Along Home, and I said this is at the same level.
All right. Well, we're done with that. Now, was Bourne in this episode? I think Bourne
yes.
was actually...
Yes, he was.
Okay, good. Yeah, I thought I remember seeing him in the background somewhere, so...
Yeah.
He's what earns the star.
The one for me is Dizodo's line. Don't be so pleased to see me. All right, I won't. That made me genuinely laugh. So for that, I give it 1 bar.
I don't know. I like the line that he had after it, and Quark says, he's trying to kill me, and Odo gets this sort of smile on his face, and Quark goes, what? And he goes, nothing. Just...
Yeah, he gets what, and the bit where he says, "Don't you Ferengi sell your boggy body parts after you've died?" And I just had a flash instant vision of Holdo having Quark's head hung on his wall. That made me laugh as well.
So does that bump it up to 1.5? No.
God, no.
Yeah.
Alamarain!
Yeah, let's just move on, should we?
Okay. Do we want to read emails? Because...
Yeah, come on.
Incoming transmission.
Okay.
Might as well do something fun.
Do you want to take one, Paul?
Let me see what I got here. Hang on. Open up my email box. And we have three in the box?
Yep.
Which one should I start with? I guess Helen?
Yeah, go ahead and do that one. Why not?
All right. Our first email is from Helen Lama, and it is titled Morning. I guess Helen's a new listener.
I would imagine. So. Oh, she's a real llama.
A llama.
No, there's only only one L.
Oh, well. She had the flowing robes. Very impressive. It says, "Dear, how is everything with you? Please, I want to know if you are still interested to partner with me concerning the pending transfer. I previously sent you details. I am surprised as you have delayed in responding to my previous mail. But if you did not receive it, kindly indicate, let me resend the message. But if you did receive it, get back, so I will send you more details concerning my investment plans and what will be your commission for the service. Waiting for your reply, Madame Helen Lama."
Right, well, first of all, Sean, are you hiding emails from us? Because I don't recall getting one from Ms. Lama.
Well, it came into the inbox just recently, and I guess the spam filter may have got it out, but luckily this one got through. So I'll scour through the spam filter and see what she actually sent to us. Cause,
yeah, I don't believe you for a second. I think you've took her up on her offer without me and Paul.
You bastard.
Yeah, you outright scumbag. You're sitting there now on a big pile of money, surrounded by lots of naked women massaging your feet, and me and Paul are still here in poverty, waiting for DiManzo's checks to clear. I am offended by what you...
I understand
you
that looking. Madam Helen Lama is quite the looker as well.
Yeah!
With a name like Lama, how can she not be? The check is in the mail.
Yeah, right. That's what DiManzo keeps telling us.
You know, Helen really didn't address anything on the show, but I'll have to get that email and see what it was. Yeah.
All I can say is thank you for listening, Helen.
Yes, we do appreciate it. We've got one after this it's only from Elena. You know, she's writing in to listen to the prophets, and her message is, "Hi." "Hi, Elena." She says, "Good afternoon, my dear friend." "Oh, well, good afternoon to you, Elena. I am the beginner in the internet, also was the first attempt to find friends in the internet. I feel slightly uncertainly. I was..." Are you making fun of Elena? She's writing into the show.
I'm very, very sorry.
Yeah, I was registered on this site and found your structure.
What does she mean by structure?
I don't... Maybe she's talking about one of the upper pylons on the station.
Did she see a massive erection and was very impressed by it?
She saw something. "It is interesting to me to learn you closer. I have overlooked to speak you about myself. My name Elena, and I am 26 years. I live in small city of Russia. I live in small city of Russia."
I thought Russia
is a small
Russia
city.
Russia is a small city, I guess. "I hope it does not frighten you."
Well, no, because it's a small city. Why would I be scared of a city?
I'm scared of Putin. He freaks me out. I'm riding his horse naked. "My opinion has no value for you, but I want that you..."
So she does listen to the show.
"I guess not. But I want that you knew that I have only the good relation to you and your country."
That's big of a...
Mm-hmm. "I want that you wrote to me on my personal address," and she gives me her email address. I shall hope that you write to me very soon. I shall send necessarily to you my some photos when you will write to me. And I also want to see your photos. I sincerely wait for your letter. Do not overlook her email address. Sincerely yours, Elena.
Well, if she wants to see my photos, I believe that my cloud account has been hacked and you can find them on the internet.
Oh, wow. That's...
I don't want to know what's in those things.
It's Andy's upper pylon.
I don't know, but Elena's reminding me of Melora.
Could be. You know, Elena might be a bit more interesting than Melora.
She sounds less angry, at least.
Yeah, she's admiring your upper pylon, you know. Oh, that was the best thing we've done.
Well, we've actually got one more email. Do you want to tackle that one, Paul?
It's the same one, isn't it?
No, it's different. It's vastly different because it's a different email address.
All right, well, I thought it was another one from Elena.
Maybe it's a different Elena.
This one is also from Elena.
Yeah. Maybe it's a different Elena.
No, it's exactly the same mail.
Now, if anybody is interested in contacting Elena, she's apparently very, very inspired by our show because her email address is profitstxc@une.net.co. Please feel free to contact her at your own risk.
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, my dear friend. I am the beginner in the internet. Also was the first attempt to find friends in the internet. I feel slightly uncertainly also, Elena. I can sympathize. I was registered on this site and found your structure. It is interesting to me to learn you closer. I have overlooked to speak you about myself. My name is... Is this the same one? Wait a minute.
Yeah, it is.
I just said it's the same email. I'm beginning to think that Elena wasn't really
down this dirty path.
Yeah, she wasn't... I don't think she was being sincere in her last email, quite frankly.
I find that hard to believe.
Elena,
I agree with you. Normally, we get nothing but brilliant emails from Elena.
Elena,
since
you're writing into the show, Elena, maybe this was just a mistake and maybe you just sent the email twice. Go ahead and write in again, Elena, and let us know what you're trying to get at, and we'll get back to you. We'll email back to you anyway.
Elena, we love all listeners, even stupid ones like you.
Aw, she's not as stupid as Melora.
I'm not so certain.
But thank you, everyone, especially you, Elena. I'll be sending you a picture of my upper pylon sometime soon.
Wouldn't you really rather see your lower pylon?
Well, maybe. It's my structure.
That is your...
She's very impressed with your structure.
Yes, I guess.
It's like Billy Joel said, it's all for Elena.
Okay, well, there's got to be a better episode next time, isn't there, Andy? Please tell us if there is.
Yes, next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, crack open your rules of acquisition.
Yay! I think we may have an up episode next time.
Yeah, I presume it's a Quark episode. So
I think I'm looking ahead. Let me check the companion. Yeah, Wallace Shawn's in there too. Oh, we're gonna get the. Grand Nagus back, so this should be a good one. Hopefully it'll wash the memory of this episode out of our minds. Alright, everyone.
Just remember, before we get too down on this one, we also got to review Cardassians, which was excellent.
That's true. So, you take the good and you take the bad.
And there you have
a massive structure.
Okay. We're taking it out on that. That was good.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O-T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Hey folks, Sean Engel here, the lesser third of the Listen to the Prophets crew, telling you that we had a bunch of conversation that really didn't deal with the show, which rightfully wasn't very good, but the conversation was, and we thought that you might want to listen to it. It does have a few spoilers for various different shows that we discuss, so if you're not interested in hearing spoilers about the various, well, shows that are probably already well known about by the time you hear this, please feel free to cut off. But if you'd like to listen to us converse about Daredevil, about Star Wars, about Batman versus Superman, then listen on and enjoy. Probably significantly more than you did the episode.
And I did watch the Batman v Superman trailer as well. That Star Wars trailer was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you mentioned, Andy, you know, prior to us coming on, that it was kind of really, really bad timing for them to release the Batman v Superman trailer on the same day that they released the Star Wars trailer, specifically because they didn't really release the official trailer. The one that I saw on the day that the Star Wars trailer dropped was the sort of shaky handheld one that had like Mexican captions underneath it. And
I've only watched it this morning, and I was sat on the crapper with my phone, and I thought, oh, go on, I'll watch this now.
Mm-hmm. And to its credit, it's entertaining. There are a couple of scenes where Superman looks like he's doing some heroic things. Obviously, the idea is the aftermath of what happened in Metropolis and people being leery of Superman. And of course, there's the obvious reference to The Dark Knight Returns with the fight between Superman and Batman, which I'm of two minds of. If it's going to be the final point of the film, if it's going to be the epic conclusion, I'm not going to be happy with it. If it's something that happens like at the end of the first act or the beginning of the second act, and they get over with it and then they realize, hey, this is stupid, we shouldn't be fighting, there's someone else manipulating us, and they team up, then I think I'll be fine with it. But once again, it's a teaser trailer, and you don't really know all that much about it, so...
So you want it to be an episode of Marvel Team-Up?
Yeah, I would. I want to see them fight for a little while, and then go, hey, we shouldn't be fighting, and then they go beat the ass of the bad guy. Yeah.
It was alright. I didn't go away from it thinking, wow, I need to watch that again right away, like I did with the Star Wars one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it, but I didn't hate Man of Steel either, so...
Yeah, same here. You know, I had some problems with Man of Steel, and it basically goes with the whole idea that DC Universe seems to be a much darker place in general. There are points of fun, there are points of light in the DC Universe, but Superman should be the shining beacon of the DC Universe, and when his movies have this sort of dark, gritty, Batman-like feel, it just upsets me. It's not the kind of Superman movie that I want to see.
And that's now, again, I have not seen the trailer, but I've seen some of the fallout from it. And it seems to me that people who were not all that critical of the Batman movies and were not that critical of Dark Knight Returns have now, based upon this trailer, kind of moved over to that side of the aisle and are saying, you know, just why so dark? This doesn't need to be so dark. So I think maybe, even if you've been like we have and kind of kept an open mind throughout these movies, maybe they're finally starting to go too far.
I hope that's the case, because I don't want to see Superman. I don't want to see a grim and gritty Superman. With Batman, that's fine. If he wants to be the sort of, you know, and we can talk a little about Daredevil as well. I've only seen, because I've been really busy this week, I've only seen the first episode of Daredevil. But from what I've seen of that, I really enjoy it. And it is a dark and gritty feeling show. But that's the type of character he is. Superman shouldn't be that way. Superman should be, like I said, he should be a beacon of light, a beacon of hope. You can have, you know, he should be kind of analogous to the way they're portraying Captain America over on the Marvel side. You know, he's the symbol of goodness in this dark or gray tinted world. And he should be the one that people look up to for this sort of idealized, for the ideals of the nation. So,
yeah. Yeah, I would be through all 13 Daredevils. There's no question. Except my kids and I promised that we would only watch it if all three of us were together. And, on the good news, bad news front, the bad news is we haven't been able to watch it as much, but the good news is because my son started a job this week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I can't really complain about that, but we watched 5 episodes, to this point, and I'm really enjoying it, and it is very, very dark.
Have you gotten to the part, has Scott Glenn shown up as Stick?
Okay, so we'll just
put
a little spoiler warning up in front here, right here, before anybody listens to something they don't want to listen. So if you don't want to hear anything, go ahead a few minutes. But no Scott Glenn as yet.
Okay.
So if you've watched 5, he's in episode 6, so he's next. Okay.
All right.
Did you finish all 13, Andy?
I finished all 13 last night, yeah. I've been averaging like 2 episodes a day. Everything else has just gone on hold while we've gone, should we watch the next Daredevil? And it's one of those, you know, it's worked if Angela wants to watch it, because she's not a comic book fan. So if she's into it, they've done a good job. And the knock-on effect of it was, I watched an episode of Arrow this morning to try and catch up with that. It was not this week's episode as we record this. It was one called Public Enemies, where Captain Lance just declares all out war on Arrow. And it's a brilliant episode, don't get me wrong. It's an absolutely great episode of Arrow. I wish he'd knocked the flashbacks on the head. But other than that, it's a brilliant episode. But the knock-on effect is Arrow now looks very light and fluffy compared to Daredevil.
Wow. Well, and I think the Netflix model allows it to be far more gritty than
Arrow.
It would be.
I mean, I've said this when, and everyone just piled on Arrow when Daredevil came out, which annoyed me, because I've got my problems with Arrow. But I do think in its third season, it's become a really fun comic book show. With, you know, I still have problems with, I wish they'd just stop with the flashbacks, because I'm just bored of them now. But this particular episode was really, really enjoyable. But they're working within different constraints. Arrow is on the CW. So there's certain things that that network's managers expect of a CW show that they have to shoehorn in. And whether they do that good or bad, you know, is entirely upon the viewer. But Daredevil's not got those restrictions. Daredevil could easily err on I don't know what network it'd err on. It's not quite dark enough for HBO.
Maybe like an FX or an AMC.
Yeah, it's a cable station show.
I'm going to disagree with you about not quite enough dark enough for HBO. It's dark enough for anything. Dark show.
I think Spartacus and The Sopranos, I think all of them are darker, much darker than Daredevil is.
Maybe they get a little bit more graphic than Daredevil does. Maybe the violence scenes are a little bit more prevalent, because Daredevil seems to be going on a model of maybe two battle scenes per episode. And maybe there'd be a little bit more of that, a little bit more violence. And again, I'm sorry, Sean, I don't want to spoil anything for you, but, the first violent scene involving the Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
Go any more into detail on it, but that gets... I think that holds up as far as darkness to anything.
Well, yeah, that was a bit brutal. But there's a lot of moments in it that make you go, oh!
Yeah, I can say in the first episode when he was... There was the fight scene outside the... Well, I'm not going to spoil it, but the fight scene that Daredevil had with the thugs where he does something that's pretty graphic to one of the thugs that's like, ooh, that's not just someone punching him, because they stopped and lovingly sort of homed in on that and, you know, framed that shot when he was doing that thing to incapacitate that person. So,
and I don't know I don't know who to credit it to, because this is not my own individual thought. I got this from somebody else that I saw posted it. Maybe Jim Dietz. But the fight scenes in this show have a totally different feel than the fight scenes that you're seeing in S.H.I.E.L.D. and in Arrow. Those scenes almost seem choreographed and almost like a little bit of a dance between the characters. These fight scenes seem much more brutal and violent.
Mm-hmm.
I read an interview with Steve DeKnight where he basically said his way in was his dad was a boxer. So that's what he wanted the fights to be like, and that's what he told the fight choreographers and stunt choreographers.
Yeah, I haven't seen, like I said, I haven't seen anything but the first episode, but I've heard that it's comparable, and I don't know if you guys have seen the movie They Live to the fight scene in that, where it is just knockdown, drag out, there's no real choreography to it, there's no flashy, you know, ninja type moves and crazy blocks or anything. It's just it's an all out beat down. And,
I'd say that's not a bad analogy.
You know, the one it's compared to a lot that I keep seeing is The Raid, which is a great film.
I need to get that in my next Netflix queue. See, is that Tony Jaa, or who is that?
I have no idea. Mm. I know it's a Korean movie, and I only watched it because Michael said, this is good, watch it. And he was right, it was brilliant.
But, you know, the great thing about this, not only about Daredevil and about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is that we are living in an era that has so many wonderful genre shows. You know, we've got The Flash, we've got Arrow. I don't know if you've watched any of iZombie. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, I really like iZombie. I'm getting
a kick out of that.
You know, I will come at this. I have not seen a Rob Thomas show ever before, and I actually like the way Rob Thomas writes his shows a little bit more than Joss Whedon. I think they have sort of similar flavor, but I'm enjoying iZombie a heck of a lot more, unfortunately, than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That doesn't mean I'm not enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but iZombie just, it's very clever. You know, it's such good stuff.
Now, what else has Rob Thomas done? I'm not sure.
Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars is a big thing. And
see,
I've never gotten
it reminds me of is the show Reaper from a few
years
back.
Yeah, it's got a bit of Reaper in it.
And I was wondering if that was Rob Thomas, because I don't know.
No, that was, God, I know the names. Wasn't Reaper the people that went on to do Agent Carter? Tara
really?
Butters and Michelle.
Oh, that's a totally different feel.
Yeah, I think Reaper's those two women who went on to do Agent Carter.
And I was just going to say, you mentioned the, you know, enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now is I liked Agent Carter so much better.
Same here.
Yeah. And see, but this is the thing as well, we're also in an era where you can't watch it all. You can't keep up with it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so backed up.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has fell off the radar a bit because Daredevil's took precedence over everything this week. But I'm only one episode behind with The Flash. I'm now only one episode behind with Arrow, but I'm two now with iZombie. But yeah, I really like iZombie. I think iZombie's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And it's very clever, and it's a nice police procedural. It's got a nice shake up on the zombie drama thing. It's very cleverly done. And like I said, it's great to be a nerd right now. Not only with the movies that are coming out, but with the TV shows. If only, you know, the only thing negative so far is comics are, they're not quite as good as the output that we're seeing in the movies and TV, unfortunately.
I would disagree with you. It's just where you look, man.
Well, okay.
Velvet by Ed Brubaker is a great book. Saga. You may just have to go over to Image.
Yeah, I'm I'm saying more the superhero genre, the DC and Marvel stuff. I've
been Daredevil. Mark Waid's Daredevil. Brilliant book.
You know what I'm enjoying
surprisingly much right now is the current run on the Hulk.
Really? Like, is that good?
I'm enjoying it.
Right. Okay.
It's kind of a different take on it. It's something I've never seen before. So, you know, when you can get something you've never seen before that's interesting to read, that's new and different. That's worth picking up as far as
who thought Marvel Star Wars comics would be as good as they are. Kanan issue 1 was a real surprise because I only bought it because Greg Wiseman wrote it, and I recently did an episode of Palace Glittering Delights about Spectacular Spider-Man the cartoon, and I thought, all right, well, he did that, he's rewriting this, go on, I'll give it a go, because Star Wars Rebels ended up surprising me by how entertaining it was, and that first issue of Kanan is really good. So I think I do hear this a lot, and I'm not biting your head off, Sean, because I love you. But I do hear comics are crap at the minute. And I just think if you think that, you're looking in the wrong places. Maybe your old favourites aren't as good as they used to be, or aren't speaking to you in the way they used to do. But take that money then and go and try something else. Try something new.
Well, and
Come on, attack Sean. Come on.
Well, no, to be honest, what I'm looking at right now is I've been kind of disappointed with Convergence so far. Now, I've only gotten the Zero and number one issue. I haven't picked up the rest, but it seems like it's trying to be Crisis on Infinite Earths, but it's more just Crisis Fight Club. And the Zero issue in total opposite of the way Crisis on Infinite Earths was, I had trouble trying to understand the history of all of that when picking up Crisis for the first time and only having a marginal knowledge of the DC universe. I was able to understand what was going on with that. So however, I will say some of the little limited two-part stories that I've read so far in Convergence, I've really liked. Speed Force, I picked that up. I thought that was really fun, dealing with Wally West. Had some characters from Captain Carrot and His Amazing Zoo Crew fast back the Speedster Turtle, which was goddamn ridiculous. I'm looking forward to the Justice League and Teen Titans issues, specifically because the Tangent Universe characters are going to be in that, and I'm looking forward to see what that is. But, yeah, I guess I should have parsed my words in saying that there are some negative things, but you do need to look for the good stuff, because there is good stuff. And I agree with you. You know, Saga, I've been enjoying. I wish that they would get more episodes out or more issues out of Afterlife with Archie, because I've been loving that. And so far since they released the trade, they've only put out two issues, and it's disappointing, because that's a fun read.
Titans Doctor Who comics are surprisingly fun.
And again, I have to thank you for sending me that big magazine size with the three issues of the 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctors in that. That was a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, see, the stuff's out there. You may just have to maybe go back issue diving. I don't know.
I definitely need to. I just wish I was in an area that had a significantly higher amount of, you know, cheap bins, because all of the stuff that I find around here, it's still, you know, they're still thinking it's the 90s, and it's like $3 and $4 a comic, and I just need to wait for sales, I guess. So since I have no real knowledge, I have not watched an episode one of Veronica Mars, how does iZombie sort of relate to the storytelling that Rob Thomas would do in Veronica Mars? Is it kind of it's kind of similar?
It's one of them. There's bits of it. There's lines of dialogue and stuff where you go, that's a bit of Veronica Marsy. But the most influential man on television in the past 10 years is definitely Whedon. I know you're not a particular fan of his, but there are any number of shows where Angela and I'll be watching it, and Angela will go, that's a line from Buffy. Or I'll go, that's a line from Buffy. And he's been so influential. The most recent Daredevil, I mean, we've mentioned before, both Angela and I loved Spartacus.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of nudity and violence in it from both sexes, so there's something for everybody. But what we really loved about it was the use of language. And the writing in it is very stylized, but the use of swearing was magnificently creative. And there's Stephen DeKnight's episode of Daredevil last night. He wrote the last two or three, I think. And we paused when I went, that's a Spartacus line. So I think you just start spotting lines and the way they write stuff And iZombie is very much in the mold of Veronica Mars. It's not as cynical as Veronica Mars, because Veronica Mars was a crime noir show set in San Diego. So there's a very, so Veronica's outlook on life is very cynical. Whereas, what's her name in Liv?
Yeah.
Liv's outlook on life isn't as cynical. And Rob Thomas has said, I was reading an interview with him where he said, it isn't just a case of interchanging the dialogue, because Veronica's response to the situations Liv finds herself in would be to say, fuck the system, I will sort this out my own way. Whereas Liv has to work within the police procedural system. So he's actually said he doesn't think the two of them would get on if they actually met each other. Okay. But it's, there's enough similarities there that if you like Veronica Mars, you will like iZombie. And if you like iZombie, you'll probably like Veronica Mars.
So, I know it's not very subtle, but I love that her name is Liv Moore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's changed from the comics, isn't it? That's not her name in the comics.
I never read the comics.
I've not read the comic either.
Hmm. Yeah. To be fair, it's not that I don't like Joss Whedon. Or I don't like Joss Whedon's show. I love Firefly. I think that's a really clever show. I think it's sort of the cult of Joss Whedon, and Joss Whedon sometimes comes off as one of these smartest guys in the room type person, and that kind of grates on me every once in a while. His shows are fine. From what I've seen of his shows, I've really enjoyed them, but sometimes his dialogue just, his characters come off as being, like I said, the smartest people in the room, and they want to tell you that they're the smartest people in the room. But see, that would be my only negative thing that I see on it.
I don't mind a lot of what Whedon says sometimes, as with all people in the public eye, he'll say something that makes you go, But for the most part, he comes across quite self-deprecating. I mean, Stephen Lacey's met him at not a signing or anything. He was in London for something, and he just showed up at a school that teaches creative writing. It was completely unannounced, maybe 24 hours beforehand. So Stephen got to go, and he said there was 50 people there, if that. And he said he was just such an engaging man in public and so open and helpful to all these people who were learning how to be writers. And I'm always got a soft spot for somebody who'll just give up the spare time to go and help other people when you reach that level of success. So, you know, I mean, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way with all that Gamergate shit, but I can't honestly say I still understand what that was about. So I don't care.
Yeah.
And I don't care what his political opinion is, because quite frankly, I just don't care what people's political opinion is. I only worry when those people are in a position to do something about their political opinion. Any half-assed idiot can have a political opinion, so I don't give a shit. But I do think, watch the first episode of Veronica Mars. Go and find it on Netflix, because I think the first season of Veronica Mars is one of the best seasons of an American television show ever.
Yeah, well.
Well, this should be short, so.
You know, this is the facts of life episode.
Well, yeah.
Hey, you know, take this bit and tack it on with the bit where we discussed earlier, and you've got a decent episode of another show.
I may just dare that, and we'll just say, hey, it's Melora. The chick from the Eighth Doctor movie is a bitch, and Bashir f***s her in the anti-grav room. The end.
That sounds painful.
Well, no, not the...
Is that what you call it?
That's not a euphemism. Not a euphemism.
Oh, take me in the anti-grav room. Okay, well, show me where it is.
It's close to the G-spot.
jam it in there real good.
Right, please don't talk anymore.